Talk Radio.
Hello, and thank you so much for joining us today for Get Yourself the Job with myself, Jennifer K. Hill, and my fabulous and amazing, much smarter than me co-host, Brandon Maslin. Just teasing. So I'm so happy to have you here joining us today. And we have a very special guest in store whose latest book just came out, which we'll be talking about here in a moment. Though before we introduce you to her and tell you a little bit about who our sponsors are who make today's show possible, I did just want to give you a quick overview of the show in case this is the first time that you're tuning in to us. Get Yourself the Job has been around for about 5 years since April of 2016. And from the beginning, our intention has been to take a 365-degree look at everything there is to know about how to land your dream job, how to find it, and even today, as we're going to talk about how to progress in your career. So with that said, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsors who make today's show possible, the people over at Markham Search, LLC. They offer premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States, including executive search, temporary placement, as well as payroll services. So now let's tell you about our fabulous guest while we have her on before she hops off for another interview. She is in high demand this week with her book recently out. Arika Nakazawa is a senior leader, entrepreneur, investor, and frequent public speaker on technology-powered business transformation. She is the CEO and founder of Board Seat Meat Inc., a Silicon Valley social impact venture, focusing on diversifying the boardroom by empowering women to build and leverage social capital with modern technology, ultimately to deliver high-performance boardroom of tomorrow. She is also the vice president and client partner at Conduent, a $4 billion revenue BPO provider to Fortune 100 companies. She is trilingual in Japanese, German, and English. Rika grew up in Japan and moved to the U.S. initially to attend Princeton University. Rika has since worked internationally over two decades in senior executive roles in strategy, business development, and marketing with Fortune 500 companies such as Nvidia, Sony, Accenture, American Express, and numerous Silicon Valley startups. She is a technology industry veteran and has served on multiple venture boards in next-generation computing and artificial intelligence ecosystems. Throughout her career, Rika has been an avid advocate for women advancing women's leadership in governance, technology, and business across industry verticals and global dimensions. She is passionate about deepening the intersection of human and digital paradigms through transformational innovation and the pursuit of purpose-driven collaboration. Rika, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. Thank you, Brandon, for having me here. Excited to be part of this show.
Yeah, well, we're going to make the most of this time we have with you. I know your book just came out. You know, why don't you start off by sharing with us a little bit about your book? I believe it's called Dear Chairwoman, correct?
Correct. Dear Chairwoman is in, if you were starting to write a letter, Dear Chairwoman is, the letters are dedicated to the next generation of women leaders. I wasn't intending to write a book at this point in my career. I figured it would be something I would do on a lazy Sunday in my 60s or 70s when I'm quote unquote retired. The truth is, I don't think I'll ever retire. But I've written a screenplay in the past. It's registered with the Writers Guild of America. In high school in Tokyo, I wrote a poem that got published in the US. And so I had accomplished those milestones as somebody who's really loved writing and reading. But the book actually came about serendipitously. I had attended a session for a Women Alumni Conference for Princeton back in late 2018. Now, sitting in a session about women on corporate boards, and all three women were seasoned company board members, public company board members. And I came out of that session really impacted by the stories I was hearing about the challenges that they faced getting to the boardroom. And I really felt this overwhelming responsibility of doing something about it and taking a crack at it. And that was really the genesis of Board Seat Meat. But as I was starting to do some initial research for Board Seat Meat and talking to women board leaders, I had an intern who was a senior in high school. Her father was a friend of mine. And when she started first working with me, I saw the some of the timid and uncertain ways that she was first engaging. And as we were talking to some of the women board leaders and hearing some of the stories, I just saw how much it really impacted her. And at the time I was thinking somebody should get these stories out, not thinking that that somebody should necessarily be me. But, and I think the real trigger point was as we were researching and really studying about the space of the lack of diversity in corporate boards, the women board chairs. So you can imagine that the pool of women who are on boards is fairly small. It's growing, thankfully, but it's still fairly small in relation to the proportion of women in business and in the general population. But the women who were board chairs more frequently used the term chairman on their board, on their bios online or in their LinkedIn profile, or maybe chairperson or board chair. Nary did I see a reference to being the chairwoman of a board. And so I took it on as a provocation. I grew up as a tomboy growing up in Tokyo. So I haven't really been one to necessarily champion genderizing titles, but it was thinking, wow, I think we need to, number one, get these stories out, because nothing inspires more than storytelling. You look at TED and other forums, your podcast of how you illuminate things that get people excited and motivated. And I thought, okay, why don't we interview these women board leaders and turn those interviews into letters as if they were writing to the women of tomorrow? And so the provocation was to say, salutation being dear chairwoman, i.e. Katie, to be the future board chair. Dear chairwoman, my name is Kathy Waller, and this is my story. Love, Kathy. And so that was really where that idea came about. And at the time, it seemed so simple until I dove into the whole journey, my own journey around this, which started about 18, 20 months ago. So it's been quite the path that I've come down. But now that it's come to fruition, it's been really fantastic to be able to finally get these stories out and bring that inspiration to life.
Wow, that is an incredible story. And you yourself are incredible. I've heard thousands of bios, and yours is bar none one of the most impressive I've ever heard. So kudos on that. And actually, it's a good intersectionality with something that got you involved in this work, which is the way people talk about themselves or think about themselves. So I worked at a company called Advancing Women Executives for 6 years and helped a lot of people actually get on the boards. And I love when someone's an expert in it, because I basically got it down to my 5-minute pitch, my 10-minute pitch on here's everything you need to know and what I found worked. I also found that especially for younger women, and this is true for all humans, women or men, when you don't see it, it's very hard to be it. And so I love that you have this book that tells people I am it, and here's how I got here, and here's my story and talking to themselves. So how much does either seeing it matter, or how much does it matter based on the narratives and the stories we tell ourselves or we tell others about ourselves to get onto boards?
First of all, Brandon, thank you for the work that you've done around advancing women in business. I didn't know that about you, so I definitely would love to have a one-on-one conversation and learn about more of the work there. I think that seeing it is definitely important. And part of it is not just seeing it, but also imagining it. And I think that that's why a book form is really interesting. I was asked, and maybe this would be part of what I do next on my next project, which I maybe will have a chance to talk about in a bit, but you know, people saying, why don't you do a podcast and interview these women or have it on video? And maybe I'm old school, but it's almost when you read something that's in black and white text and read it, it's you own the visuals around it. And I think that that's the part that's really important, is that you're not being fed something, you're being given the tools to imagine something. And so I think that that's really important. I also think it's good to understand that one of the things that emerges often, and Brandon, you've probably come across this in terms of working with women in business, is a question of what do you think about, or have you been impacted with the imposter syndrome, right? Imposter syndrome tends to come up a lot. And the my response to that is, yes, of course, I've had imposter syndrome, but the way that I interpret imposter syndrome might be a little bit different from others in the sense that Shakespeare said it best. I'm not going to quote him exactly, but all the world's a stage and we're merely actors or actresses in it. And the idea is that you have to be it before you are it. And so the stories that are in the book tell that in terms of how some of these women got to where they are. You combine the notion that you have to be it, whether you want to interpret that as imposter syndrome or simply as Atticus says to Scout in To Kill a Mockingbird, climb into someone's shoes and walk around in it, is to then is to own that and to be able to believe that you can be that because other people have traversed and that in combination with the art and the power of saying yes to opportunity, right? And so that's something else that was really profound and consistent from some of the stories that I interpreted through the interviews that then came out into the letters is that that's really important. So those examples and in being able to imagine black and white text in your own mind and how that takes shape is number one. Number two is embracing the art form of the imposter syndrome and embracing it and owning it. And then the third part is just about really being able to recognize that you're not alone in this journey. And there have been people that have come before you, and in particular, people that have come before you that have been underprivileged in far more profound ways than you have. And in the cases where they have been profoundly underprivileged or challenged, how that actually turned into an opportunity and something that helped to differentiate them and elevate them to that next level.
Yeah, I think this is so inspiring, Rica. A friend of mine, Rhonda Vateri, who actually has joined us a few times on the show, she was one of the first women who was on boards that I had ever personally connected with. And it's such an inspiring story when you hear about women who are breaking boundaries, breaking these glass ceilings of what's possible. And I think that we're entering new territory. So I would love to hear from you, Rica. If you could share, what are some things, let's say that we have a woman out there, maybe she's early in her career, late in her career, but she feels this calling to be a leader and to sit on a board and to make the difference she wants to see made in the world. What advice would you give to this woman?
The most important, one of the most important things you need to ask, and Simon Sinek does a great piece on this, right, is you have to ask why. And you have to ask why multiple times, right? And I had a really illuminating conversation with a gentleman that's been on the board of public companies many times over, I think 20 plus, has been the chairman of the board. And he was telling me the story of how he was at a Harvard Business School board training for women program. And he's invited in as a guest speaker. So he came in and then he went out to dinner with the group. And there were incredibly accomplished women around the table, senior vice presidents, C-suite women executives. And he said, okay, I'm going to give each of you 2 minutes to tell me why you want to be on a board. And after he went around the room, they said, okay, so who would you put on the board? He said, well, none of you, because none of you could tell me why you want to be on a board. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that we have to try to understand, and speaking of when I talked earlier about imposter syndrome, when I came to States for college, I actually took some time off, and this isn't anywhere because it's pre-digital, so you're not going to see this digital thumbprint anywhere, but I actually took some time off, and I moved to New York City on my own at the age of 19, or however young and naive I was, to join a theater company because I was taking a theater course at Princeton, and my professor told me that I had a gift, and that gift was the ability to actually see something in my brain and figure out how to articulate it in a way where other people could see what I was seeing. And so I don't know if you want to be a lawyer, if you want to be a politician or Wall Street, whatever you're doing here at Princeton, I think it's important for you to know that you have that gift. And at the time, I was really challenged with what do I want to major in? Because I had so many different channels on my radio station that I wanted to tune into. And so he said, well, why don't you join my theater company? You'll be the young, but we'll work with that. So I moved to New York, and one of the most valuable lessons I learned is that it's kind of like a paper mache mask. When you make a paper mache mask, the only way that the mask is actually going to work is that if it fits the contours of your face. So the first thing that you need to do is take a mold of your face and you can make the mache mask. And so that was a bit of an analogy that I have for you have to understand the contours of your own self first before you can don something on top of that. Not to be something else, but just to don something on top of it, like a layer cake. And so when people say, well, I want to be this, or I want to achieve that, or I want to be a board member, it's really important to ask why. Because if the reason is to get a title or to be in that sexy domain of public company board director, are you sure you understand what that means? Are you sure if you're an operator, being on a public company board is probably not going to be for you, because that's not an operator role. Where you are going to be most suited, because you want to serve and to be an operator, is going to be a nonprofit board, because nonprofit board members are very hands-on and they get involved. And by the way, nonprofit board members often are on public company boards too. So if the motivation is to be a lifelong learner and figure out how you can engage with people and network and build that social capital, which is the core of how women and men and anybody advances as human beings. And by the way, during COVID time, it's completely, not completely, but it's transformed in many ways, which is the work that we're doing in Board Seat Meet. That's something that you need to remember, that if you want to do something for a specific reason, you have to think about what is the right archetype for you in terms of being a board member. Because when we talk loosely about being a board member, that most often people think, oh, public company board, but it can be a board of various types. So it could be super exciting to be on a SPAC board, for example, right? And to be part of that rocket ship, assuming that the SPAC does really well. So you have to ask why, and then ask the why to the question, to the way that you answer the question, and really get to the heart of it and understand what are the contours that you have. And maybe the contours you have, you don't like, and you need to figure out how you shift those contours and figure out a roadmap from there.
So once you figure out those contours and you get a deeper understanding of yourself, we were doing a panel discussion in New York one time, and this woman who was on three boards, you know, said one of the things she did when she wanted to get on boards early on, and she wasn't getting on, she would get leaned in, she'd get really excited. And she just found that in New York, it didn't work. And then one day she leaned back in her chair. She was a general counsel, said, what can I do for you? How can I help you? And she realized that's what she'd done her entire life as a lawyer, as at least a GC. And she got on three boards in consecutive order with that approach. Now that works for her. That's her contour. She had a very much just tell me what I can do for you and I'll help you. And
right.
That was her approach. Someone calls you though, and they say, hey, and this happened to me a lot in my journey, and it still does as a feminist coach. They call you and they say, what are your tips? How can I get on board? Right. And I think there is something around the unconscious bias, obviously not to mansplain anything, God forbid, but the concept of men are getting promoted on potential, women on what they've done, or that heart, I think it was the Hewlett-Packard study where, to your point of the say yes, that what was it like women had to be like something like 100% certain, the guy's 60. And every time I hear that, I tell board members and CEOs who are men, I'm going, hire women, because at least you know they can do the damn job. But I'm wondering, it drives me nuts. I once had an Australian CEO said, well, I can't do this job in front of the entire audience. And everyone nodded their head. I just like that. And a cool Aussie accent that I'll bear our audience from. Here's what I would ask you, though. Someone calls you. They say, Rika, I've got a minute. Tell me what I should be doing to position myself or to find opportunities for board seats. What would you tell them?
So number one, you have to understand what your, this is classic, right? What is your brand? What is it that you want to be able to have people know about you? And then number two is, how do you make sure that that's evident? Because sometimes what's as clear as day to us is not going to be totally, you know, visible to other people. So how do you make sure that you have that articulation and the way that you message and position yourself is on point? And then the third one is the social capital piece, right? I think that there are a lot of women that feel like if they take a board training program, that's going to be the panacea. That's part of it. Although a lot of women are like, well, why do I have to take a board training program when the men who preceded me didn't have to do a course at Harvard or a course at Stanford, right? So there's some of that. But I do think it's important for board training programs, because they do illuminate to you what are the responsibilities of being on a board, whether that's a private company board, public board, less so a nonprofit board. So I think understanding the nature of the work is also helpful in terms of how you present and package yourself. And then social capital, right? So just like many other things, it's not just what you know, it's who you know. And this is a case in point with COVID-19, people being up in arms and saying, why am I paying $60,000 for a year at Harvard when I can't even be on campus and network and get to know people, because so much of what I benefit from being at this Ivy League is going to be the network and the people and the social capital. And social capital is fundamentally part of the ways that people have advanced into leadership, in that Joe is out golfing with Bill, and on the fifth hole, Joe's like, hey man, by the way, we really need to get somebody in who knows cybersecurity. And Bill's like, I know the guy. And so I'm totally oversimplifying this and making a little bit of a situation. Yeah. But that's the social capital, right?
Yeah, and I don't think you're oversimplifying it either. You have a beautiful point there, right?
Yeah.
So what about, just one question around that, because I know you were limited time, so I'd love for you to touch on this, which is that one of the things that they always said at all, the company I worked at, which is, it's not just who you know, it's who knows you. What about finding those advocates, the Ricas in the world maybe, because you're certainly plugged in, to talk about you? How important is that?
Absolutely. Sponsorship, right? We call it, it's not just mentorship, it's sponsorship and advocacy, people who are going to advocate you, but you have to help them. In other words, figure out how you package yourself in a way that helps them help you. Because unless that's clear, then it's going to make it really difficult for them to figure out how they advocate for you. And this is another piece for when you talk about women, it's not just women. It's, I'm an Asian woman. I know I don't look it. For those who are listening, if you Google me, there aren't that many Rika Nakazawas running around, but you'll see that I don't look particularly Asian. I'm half Japanese. The German side, my mother's from Neuwied, Germany, came out a lot more prominently. But I can say that I identify as Asian woman, and I can say that my sister's in this space. One of the key challenges is that we have a much a larger disparity in terms of executive ascendance. Asian women is lower than Black women, is lower than, you know, Latin women, and et cetera. So when it comes to being a certain culture as a woman, that's also a key consideration, where Asian women, I think, have to go a little bit more above and beyond in speaking out and representing yourself and not being shy and being being able to be vocal about how you are, who you are, where you are, and why you want to be someplace that you're not at today.
Rika, oh my gosh, we're going to have you on for future shows to talk more about the work that you do, because I think it is so powerful. Whatever we can be doing to empower ourselves and, you know, like you said, which I think is so poignant in the beginning, to be who we are. You know, we have this imposter syndrome hanging over our head. And so how can we shift that, and how can we embody and be the leaders, the great leaders, regardless of race and who we are and where we come from, and just be the leaders in our communities? So thank you for doing everything you're doing, Rika. And I know you have to hop off for another interview. So if you wouldn't mind, just remind people, please, where they can connect with you and where they can find out about your book.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jennifer. You can find the book on Amazon. It's in Kindle and paperback, and it's Dear Chairwoman. And that is the only book titled that way. And in fact, what may happen is they may force you to look at Dear Chairman first, which is apparently what's been happening, but eventually the algorithms will figure it out. That's somehow so symbolic. But look to Dear Chairwoman, and or my name, Rika Nakazawa, is the author, and hopefully that will show up. And by the way, I'm merely the channel, right? I'm author, quote unquote, but really I'm just the channel, because it's everybody else's stories that are really profound, and my designer of the cover that everybody loves, Yuiko Sugino, did that. And you can find me at boardseatmeet.com, which is the name of my venture, Board Seat and Meet, as in meat, so Board Seat Meet. And you can also email me, rika@boardseatmeet.com. And I just want to thank you again, Brandon and Jennifer, for having me on today to be part of this conversation that's super important.
Thank you so much. You are an incredibly inspiring individual. And I love when someone models the work that they do. And I just want to honor, I've heard thousands of bios. Yours is one of the best I've ever heard. The way everything that you've talked about, it just, it's so indicative of, I hope people watch this episode to see just how impressive you are. So it's an honor to meet you. And to watch someone just living their truth, it just means a lot, I know, to me and Jennifer. So thank you for doing that, sincerely.
Yeah, thank you so much, Rika, and wishing you continued success and many, many other interviews. And may your book hit the bestseller list with ease and effortlessly within the next week.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you so much for joining me, Rika. Cheers. And Brandon, as Rika departs, says, I thought that we might just have some closing thoughts between you and myself on anything that didn't get said. You know, I think Rika had to hop off for Bloomberg, so we're grateful we got her for a moment before that. Brandon, what were your takeaways from the interview today?
Well, I mean, again, Rika is so impressive in the sense that the way she writes her bio, I know she put a lot of work into that. The way that, I mean, it's genius, Rarika, in a way of that, who does she know? She now knows chairwoman of boards. I would recommend everyone get involved in one, you know, with her programs, because she is a very well-connected person who doesn't just know people, they know her. So, you know, when it comes to this, these opportunities do happen. She's not wrong. They happen on the golf course. They happen on, you know, at bars, sports teams. I mean, it's so silly the way that people get on the boards without, you know, it drives me nuts sometimes, especially when I have a candidate that should be the top board seat and the CEO is like, no, I just want my friend. He makes me comfortable. That's not the point. The lawyer in me loses his mind. The lawyer says the responsibility of a board is to the corporation, not to make the CEO comfortable, to make the corporation or the organization thrive. And I get the sense, and this is, I'm passionate feminist, but I've seen the best board members I've met, the women who are passionate about helping the organization thrive. And I get the sense that Rarika gets that. One thing that I think is so important, the one thing I tell everyone, there's Rarika out there, there's this thing called the Athena Alliance, which a lot of my leaders that I coach have gotten involved with. I certainly was involved with AWE, Advancing Women Executives. But I, you know, I do think these courses work. The tip that I told everyone that worked bar none, and when people would call me and say, I'm on a public board, Brandon, because of this piece of advice, it was always the same. Tell every person I know. That's it. Hard stop. Tell every single person I know that I want to be on a board. And to Rarika's genius point, why? And I would just add to Rarika's point and to my point around brand, how? What board and how do you want to help? What board, how do you want to help them? Do those two things. Tell everyone. I mean, gardeners, everyone.
So, Brandon, there's a question I can feel in the listeners' minds right now. And that question is, why does anybody want to be on a board? What is the big deal about being on a board? Maybe this is the first time that one of our listeners is hearing this, or viewers, and they're saying, well, what's the big deal? Why would a man or a woman want to be on the board? What is the why of why maybe somebody out there might even be percolating, saying, I didn't know about this before, but maybe I want to do this now. It is a paid board seat, correct?
Yeah, well, it depends. I mean, so a lot of people get involved in nonprofit board seats, but know this, nonprofit board seats usually want your time and they want your money. And what I say is, I want the world to be a better place. You know this about me, Jennifer. But when I'm coaching someone, I'm focused on an individual, and the boards that I want them to be a part of, especially if it's nonprofit, where they're going to be giving time and money, is all I care about. And that is who are you on the board with? Now, if you're on the board of the Met Gala, in New York, or I don't know, the Fields Museum in Chicago, just choosing something, and the CEO of Coca-Cola is on the board, go be on that board. You know, who you're on that board with matters. For-profit boards are almost always paid. They're not always. Sometimes they're stock options, et cetera. Public corporations are 99.9% of the time stock, I would imagine, and paid. It's a big commitment. And it's funny that you mentioned it, Jennifer, because one of the dirty little secrets of what I did was, I used to just say, here's what you need to do. And I can't tell you how many C-suite executives or VPs would call me, go, Brandon, tell me what you need to do to be on a board. Like, what does that actually mean? It's okay to not know. It's kind of like law. It's like you make it a mystery so it sounds more impressive. It's not. It's pretty simple. You're going to have about 4 quarterly meetings a year, maybe more depending on the board. You're going to advise on the trajectory. You're going to have a comp committee. Ethics committee post Sarbanes-Oxley. I know these are big words, but post financial crisis of actually 2001, I believe, you now need to have an audit committee. That's Enron. Thank you, Enron. But you know, this is what happened. So, by the way, though, this is how women are getting on the boards, which is great. Women are getting on the boards because now you need an audit committee chair, and you know that oftentimes I can be a head of audit, etc. So there's unique ways. The other thing I think, what I have found, this is the truth. How do you get it? One of the great mystiques of entertainment. How do you get entertainment? You need to be in entertainment. Very simple. All you do is be in entertainment, then you get entertainment. How do you get on a board? You need to be on a board. It's very depressing. But you know, one of the things I used to put up a stat that said, it's like 17% of women are on boards, and it just went to 19 while I was at all. Over like 5 years, I went up like 2 points. And I was like, that's great, right? No. it's basically Oprah and Sheryl Sandberg and like two and Arianna Huffington on like 199 boards. It's just like the same woman on every board. And it's a little depressing. I don't want every woman on the same board. I want a multitude and a plethora of every unique individual. And dear chairman, my chairwoman might be the best damn title I've heard in years, because that is a key to success.
Yeah, and her cover of the book is beautiful. If nothing else, go Google the cover. It is just very, it's one of my favorite book covers I've seen in a very long time. And speaking as somebody who has sat on nonprofit boards, I recommend it. You know, if you are out there and you're thinking, huh, this board thing kind of is piquing my interest. I actually started sitting on a board at 25 years old. My doctor had founded the American Wine Society in Los Angeles. And next thing you know, he tells me he's retiring. I tell him I love wine. And he says, hey, you should come to a meeting. And over a glass of champagne, I became secretary and a year or two later, chairperson of the American Wine Society, which, by the way, was a huge coup because whenever I went wine tasting anywhere, I got free wine, 50% off. So there are perks to being on boards. And it also led me to sitting on the board of another nonprofit called SOS Mentor. And I learned so much being on the board. I also learned I didn't like long meetings, so I don't know if I would be the best board person because it is cumbersome. It is, there is a lot of commitments. And in the new company that my business partner and I just co-founded, we had to sign our documents, and it's, there is a lot of accountability and responsibility. And with that accountability, though, comes a lot of power that you can change the world. You can make a difference, whether it's at a local level of a nonprofit. And actually, to your point, Brandon, many of the people that I sat on the board with for both the nonprofits that I sat with are still dear friends to this day. And so you do develop these long-lasting relationships in unexpected places that can really impact your life. And as Rika was slightly touching on, if you have zero board experience and you're trying to get a public board seat versus you have some sort of board experience, then that might be a little bit more leverage. It's kind of like we talk about in job hunting all the time. Let's say you don't have experience in a particular field, go out and volunteer in some sort of similar peripheral field, and that can really help you to pivot when you're ready into that new trajectory career. So the same, I would say, is true of boards.
Yeah, and that's right. I mean, I like to say one of the differences between a regular bio and a board bio or a board resume, and you should have a board resume with that if you're serious about your journey here. Because when someone says, hey, can I get your resume? You want to be able to give it to them immediately. One of the big differences is it's just how much interaction you have with the board. Is it one of the big differences? So if you're all constantly, you know, delivering and reporting and being in front of the board, then that's a coup. One of the things you point out that I think is so vital there is what I found for the people who got on these major public boards wasn't necessarily that. It was that they had a really niche quality or specific thing. I'm doing Weight Watchers now, non-sequitur. And I know a leader who got onto the board, but she was the intersectionality of healthcare and tech. And when you really think what Weight Watchers is, it was pivoting from those in-person meetings to the app. And she was that, she was a linchpin. And I saw this a lot for actually women in tech, where they were the linchpin between the industry and the technology. And so really, you don't have to be an expert on boards. You have to be an expert in your field. And then a board can, you can go join the board and provide that insight and wisdom. You are trusted advisors in the truest sense of the word. You're advising, you're holding space, and you're helping them move towards the future or protecting them from making mistakes. So yeah, that's really, those are the key factors, but there's no secret way. But what I would say is, I don't know that there's no secret way. I think Rika's book might have the answer. So go read it.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Brandon. Thank you for everybody for tuning in for this unique episode. We have never done an episode before on what it takes to be on a board, why you might even want to be on a board, and more specifically, how women can join boards. So I hope everybody enjoyed this as much as Brandon and I did and learned something new from our guest Rika today. Check out her book, Dear Chairwoman. And as always, we're so grateful that you tuned in, joined us today. And we invite you, in case there's a burning question you had in your mind about something Rika asked or one of us said, feel free to email us at getyourselfthejob@gmail.com, or feel free to interact with us as well on our YouTube channel, also by the name of Get Yourself the Job, or our Facebook page, also Get Yourself the Job. And you can also find us on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music. We love it when you rate us. We deeply appreciate it. It helps us to reach a wider audience and to support more people. What if tomorrow every one of us could wake up and be doing something we loved that filled our hearts with happiness and joy? Wouldn't that be a great world to walk into? So I'm Jennifer Cahill. Thank you for joining myself, Brandon Maslin, Rika Nakazawa today, and wishing you a wonderful rest of your week filled with miracles, wonder, possibilities, and work that you love to do.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.